Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode number 83. Podcast at sightandsound.co.uk, as always, is that all-important email address if you'd like to get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you, and thank you to those who contact us with feedback about the show. Now, did you know that it's National Optometry Week this week, from the 17th to the 24th of March? I have to say, I didn't, not until last week. But on today's show, we'll be talking to Sarah Arnold, who's an optometrist in England, all about looking after those eyes. Stay right where you are. Really looking forward to catching up with Sarah in just a sec. It's really busy actually at the moment. You know that we're slap bang in the middle of the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference, which is taking place out in Anaheim in Los Angeles. I used to go to CSUN in my previous job a long time ago. In my previous life, I spent a number of years going over to the CSUN Assistive Technology when it used to be on. If those of you who were around long enough remember CSUN, when it moved to San Diego for a while, but before that it was in Los Angeles. It was in the Marriott at LAX airports. You'd get off the plane, you'd go down to the Marriott. We used to stay in a travel lodge because it was cheaper, and go down to the Marriott, and it was just a great couple of days. It's in Anaheim this year in Los Angeles. I think that's quite near Disney, isn't it? I think, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, this year we have boots on the ground from Sight and Sound in Los Angeles. And in the next few days, I'll be catching up with some of our colleagues to find out what's hot and maybe what's not at the CSUN conference. So stay tuned. We'll have another podcast, I hope, published before the end of the week. Now, as I did say, it is World Optometry Week. We're celebrating World Optometry Week as I record, from the 17th to 24th of March. And on Saturday, the 23rd of March, it's World Optometry Day. And the theme for this year's World Optometry Week and Day is optometry's commitment to global eye care. You know, really, really important, I think. And I suppose eye care is always at the front of what we're doing at Sight and Sound Technology, particularly in the last couple of years, I think, where we've started moving a little bit more towards working with those specialisms and the eye care sector, alongside, of course, all the other things that we do. Anyway, delighted to be joined on the line to help me unpack all this stuff about optometry and ophthalmology and eye care, and of course to help us celebrate and mark National Optometry Week, by Sarah Arnold, who's an optometrist working with us here at Sight and Sound Technology and doing some really great things, and we'll talk about that in a sec. Sarah, welcome to the show. Thanks a million for joining us. Great to have you.
Thank you, Stuart, for having me.
Where are you in the UK, by the way? I never even asked you that in all our off-air conversations.
Oh, well, I'm nestled in the south of England, just north of Portsmouth, about an hour from London, in a very beautiful part of the world. So I'm very lucky.
Sounds absolutely lovely. Listen, thanks for taking our call today and for kind of talking to us a little bit about, I think, a really important area, the whole subject of caring and looking after your eyes. And maybe we'll get into that in a little while. But let's hear a little bit about you first, because you are an optometrist, but you also have low vision.
I do. So I've been working as an optometrist for over 30 years now. I trained in London, and I was diagnosed with an inherited retinal disease when I was 13. That didn't stop me. I decided that wasn't going to stop me training to do what I wanted to do. And I went on, and I've spent 30 glorious years working in an independent practice, which I've really enjoyed. And my vision has been relatively stable, so I'm quite lucky. I'm currently taking a career break. But I'm working with Sight and Sound and really enjoying using the knowledge and skills I've got of lived experience with sight loss, with also my optometry knowledge and all the interactions I've had with my clients over the years. It's really giving me, you know, a great breadth and a good angle, really. So it's a good a good career to bring to this sort of area.
What was it like maybe 30 years ago though, Sarah, when maybe people with low vision going into that sort of sector mightn't have been heard of as much? Was there much, I suppose, what was the attitude of the industry to someone like yourself coming in?
Surprise and shock, really. I think most people thought I was completely mad. I didn't have a very good prognosis. They told me I would lose all my vision by the time I was 30, 35. I'm obviously a lot older than that now, and I'm still managing relatively well independently, and I've still got good central vision. So there was a lot of skepticism. Everybody kind of was a bit surprised, and I was welcomed as the guinea pig on many occasions for all the other students to come and look at. So I was quite popular from that point of view. But there are many of us. I think something that I'm interested in is how many optometrists go on to develop poor sight, just through normal things like glaucoma and macular degeneration throughout their career, and how well they feel supported in that industry. So that's another thing, another little question mark where things maybe could be improved.
And, I suppose it must have also been, and it must continue to be, very interesting for you working with other people with vision loss, maybe talking to children, talking to parents. And they I would imagine, they must get great comfort maybe from seeing someone like yourself who's been in this profession for 30 years.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disclose exactly what the problem is, but having that, really appropriate empathy is and just be able to really target the issues that they're going to face and talk about those and demystify it, I think, from first-hand experience is very helpful.
Okay. Look, I think it's great that somebody in your role, somebody with vision loss, is doing this stuff and flying the flag for people with sight loss throughout the UK. One of the things you've been doing with Sight and Sound is supporting some really interesting technology called Empathize and sort of showing it and going out and spreading the word. Can you just tell us a little bit about what that does?
So Empathize is a virtual reality headset which has been programmed with lots of different scenarios depending on different sight loss conditions, and you can overlay them. So for instance, I can demonstrate to people cataracts and glaucoma, the glare that people can suffer with cataracts, or I can also demonstrate visual field losses either through things like retinitis pigmentosa or through diabetic retinopathy, and there are various grades of severity. You can overlay with various grades of vision or various grades of color vision problems. So it's a really flexible tool, and it's great to immerse somebody who doesn't understand what it might be like to have sight loss. It immerses them in that kind of experience in lots of different scenarios. So there are lots of artificial scenarios in a doctor's clinic, for instance, or in a playground for children, on the bus, public transport, crossing the road, that kind of thing. And that's really beneficial. Although it's not a real life situation, it gives you an idea. And because it involves eye tracking, you can't look around it. So what people tend to say to me after 5 minutes in the VR headset is, can I take this off now? Yeah. This is really unpleasant. Yeah. And I go, yeah, but just remember, the poor person who's actually got this doesn't have that option.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I remember talking to our CEO, Glenn Tukey, about that. And he made some similar comment that he really felt after a while he needed to take this thing off, because I guess you almost feel trapped in the condition. And it sounds to me, now as somebody who's never seen, but it sounds to me that this is such a huge step up from the old sim specs that we've had forever, right? Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Sim specs. They have a value. They're pretty useful when you're showing small children or large groups of people. But I think Empathize really is the next step. And it's great if you want to train health professionals. Maybe you've got people working in an eye clinic or doctor's surgeries or opticians, in fact. And they're dealing with these people all the time, but they don't really understand the world that these people are living in.
Do you have that kind of eureka moment with people where they're looking and saying, my goodness, I've been working in this sector for maybe 20 years with patients, and now I have this has sort of opened a new door to me?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody thinks they know. And even within the sight loss community, I think if you ask somebody with retinitis pigmentosa what it's like for somebody else who's got a hemianopia or visual field loss due to stroke, they just can't get their head around it. So you can even, I've demonstrated to this to people with visual impairment, and everybody thinks that everyone else is like them. And that's been really shocking for them, how different it is for everybody.
Yeah, and that's the thing about eye condition, isn't it? And I suppose in particular with low vision, that no two people see in the same way.
No, and no two people will feel it affects them in the same way either. So, I mean, for me, I've seen it as a bit of a superpower, but for somebody else, you know, it's the end of the world. So it's everybody's different.
All right. Now, will you help us out in one of the things when we were chatting last week in advance of this session, talking about the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist? I remember being asked that before. And to my shame, Sarah, I couldn't properly explain. And it's one of those table quiz questions, I think. So what is the difference?
So it's a question we always get asked, actually, in this profession, is what is the difference between all these op names, ophthalmologist, optometrist, ophthalmic optician, dispensing optician. They all sound similar. An ophthalmologist is a doctor. They've been through medical training at university. They've done all their additional qualifications, and they've decided to specialize in eye health. And then they subspecialize within that into dealing with either surgical issues or medical issues. Most of them do cataract surgery. So they operate, they prescribe drugs, they're doctors. An optometrist is not a doctor. An optometrist is a standalone qualification that you do at university. And we can test people's eyes, we can detect disease, refer onwards into the primary care services like GPs, or directly to an ophthalmologist if we suspect something that requires urgent attention. And we can prescribe spectacles, contact lenses, low vision aids, that kind of thing. And we work in the hospital sector or in the high street. We are supported by opticians or dispensing opticians who are qualified to dispense spectacles, safety specs, low vision aids, that kind of thing as well. And they are specialists in lens types and what's best going to suit you. And some of them go on also to train in kind of in a hybrid role doing contact lens work as well. So there's quite a lot of blend, but they are distinct standalone professions.
So in terms of a patient journey, maybe if somebody was maybe newly diagnosed or trying to get a diagnosis, would they see an optometrist first and then maybe be referred to an ophthalmologist if there was something showing?
That's correct, yes, Stuart. A lot of people will go to their general practitioner maybe if they're not sure what's going on. And usually the general practitioner will say, have you had an eye examination recently? And if the answer is no, the patient gets directed to the optometrist, who's the person with the most knowledge and skills and the equipment, in fact, to examine that patient. And then if you find something wrong, you refer back to the GP or directly to the ophthalmologist, depending on the pathway. Mostly people present themselves and say, I can't see properly, or I've got headaches, or my eyes are sore. And that's the way they come in. Or they just come because they know they need a regular eye health check.
Okay. And as we talked at the start of the show, it is National Optometry Week, and the theme is about optometry's commitment to advancing global eye health or eye care. It's really important, isn't it, around people who have low vision, looking after their eyes. Maybe sometimes people think, well, I'm not going to get any better. It is what it is. I'll just leave it. But that's not always the case, right?
No, that isn't always the case. And I think education is key here, really. There are a lot of eye conditions which can happen even though you have an eye condition. You might already have an existing eye condition, and maybe there's nothing that they can do to help you see better. But the eyes are a very good window on your general health. When an optometrist looks into your eye, they can actually see blood vessels, living blood vessels, and how healthy they look, and lots of signs that point to diabetes or hypertension, so high blood pressure, for instance, and other conditions which are hereditary, like glaucoma and macular disease, that you may have but not realize. So that's really important, from letting your family know from a genetic point of view if you've got something that's hereditary, but also in terms of, you know, it could save your life if you've got diabetes and you didn't know. Your optometrist is probably the first person that's going to pick it up. And similarly with the front of the eye, you've got tears that keep the eye moist. And if you don't have enough of them, the eyes can get very, very dry and sore. And that can be treated very effectively with eye care and with eye drops. And a lot of people don't realize their eyes are sore just because they're dry.
And it's that message, I suppose, about the importance of eye care, about regular checks, about looking after your eyes. You know, you hear stories. I've talked to people over the years, a couple of people who lost their vision, and will say things like, "I was out driving and I noticed, you know, spots, or I noticed, you know, I couldn't see things properly." And within 2 weeks, they find that they can't drive anymore, and suddenly they end up with severe vision loss. Scary stuff, I suppose, for people as well.
Very scary. And I think a lot of people don't really want to go back to that place. So, you know, if you went to the optician with, "Oh my goodness, I think I'm losing my sight," and the next step was you saw the ophthalmologist and you were registered and with a sight impairment, and then what? I think often people don't even think about maybe going back to the optician to see what can be done. And, you know, even if it's getting spectacles to take the glare away, if you're finding light very uncomfortable, or eye drops to help you feel more comfortable, or generally just to be referred onward social services so that the sensory loss team can come and support you. Sometimes people fall through the gaps. So, you know, your optometrist is a really useful person to have a good relationship with.
Absolutely. What's the link maybe between eye care and good diet? I know when I was in we'd kind of joke about this for years. I was in a school for the blind years ago, and they kept giving us carrots. So it didn't improve my eye condition, but maybe it did for some people. Is it true though that eating more veg is good for your eyes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been a lot of studies for those listeners who are very keen. There's something called the AREDS2 study, which really looks at which doses of trace elements and all of these special things that we have in our food are very, very important for good vision and eye health and brain health and heart health. So a lot of those things are kind of intertwined. But yeah, carrots, leafy greens. I'm always plugging the power of kale. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but if you take the caterpillars out, it's usually better. depending on if it's homegrown. But yeah, so all of these things. And unfortunately, our food is so intensively farmed now that a lot of the really important elements in the diet are missing. So yeah, Eating as much of these things and highly colored fruits and vegetables are full of antioxidants and very good for you, basically. So it's not just a myth.
Okay,
so I'm not sure they help you see in the dark, but they definitely do help you see.
So get out there and eat your vegetables, basically, and look after your eye. And I suppose it's also important, Sarah, isn't it, for people who might be listening to this podcast who are fully sighted, you know, it's important to get those regular eye checks just in case anything might be happening in the background.
Yep. Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times I have seen people in their late 50s who have been fudging along, trying to read with just holding things further away or borrowing their wife's reading glasses. And they think, "Oh, I'm not getting old. I don't need an eye test. There's nothing wrong with me." And they come in. And actually, if you'd seen them 10 years ago, it would have been a lot better because they have end-stage glaucoma and they just didn't realize. So a lot of these conditions which are manageable with treatments are not terribly symptomatic. They're generally not painful. They creep along quietly. And so you adapt as you go. And it's not until you get to the end stage of the disease where it's much harder to salvage it that the patient turns up. And that's a shame. So regular eye test is kind of preventative as well, because by spotting patterns of change in somebody's eye health over a period of time, you're going to pick things up really quickly.
Okay, so mind your eyes, get your eye health checked regularly, and eat your veg, eat your greens,
eat,
I think is they're saying.
Eat your greens.
Okay.
Healthy
eating, no harm for us all to hear that, I think, me included, very definitely. Sarah, thanks so much for giving us a really nice overview to what you do, and it's been really nice to catch up with you. I would love to maybe bring you back, because I know you're doing some really interesting stuff with Sight and Sound. So thanks for joining us for National Optometry Week and National Optometry Day, which takes place this Saturday. Get your eyes checked, folks. Sarah, lovely to catch up with you, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Sarah Arnold for joining us on the show. Thoroughly enjoyed that catch up with Sarah. And Sarah will be back. We've just been chatting off air about doing a little bit more, I think, around this whole area of optometry and eye health and good eye care. Something for all of us to think about, I suppose. And good diet. God, I started after Christmas on my Greek yogurt and grapes and fruit, and I'm doing okay. That's all I can say. It wanes a bit towards the end of the week. Anyway, that's just about all we have time for on this edition of the show. We're back soon. Until then, though, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound Technology, many thanks for listening, and talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.